Checking in with Maine's top legislative leaders, the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. Last week, Maine's Senate did something unusual. It voted to ask the state Supreme Court to rule on the constitutionality of the ranked choice voting measure approved by voters in November. The week before that, the legislature passed and the governor signed a bill delaying implementation of parts of the marijuana initiative. And this morning, Governor LePage addressed the legislature's Appropriations Committee about his proposed budget. The legislative session is indeed in full swing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will get an update from Maine's two top-ranking legislative leaders, Senate President Mike Thibodeau, a Republican from Winterport, and Speaker of the House Sarah Gideon, a Democrat from Freeport. What are your questions for them? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Tomorrow, Governor Paul LePage is expected to deliver his State of the State address, weather permitting. In his address, the governor will lay out his priorities for the coming year. Today, I have two guests with me in our Augusta studio who will be responsible for implementing, blocking, or modifying what's on the governor's agenda. Sarah Gideon is a Democrat from Freeport and is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. And Michael Thibodeau is a Republican from Waldo County, Maine Senate President. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the current legislative session? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back to both of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on, Jennifer.
Hello.
I'm going to start with a question that I think we may have bipartisan agreement here on Maine Calling to start this program on this first Monday of February, and that is, did you watch the Patriots game? And if so, do you agree, Mike Thibodeau, that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time?
Well, isn't it great that we don't even have to have that discussion anymore in America? I think there, after last night's performance and the number of Super Bowl rings that that Tom currently has, I think they can now start debating who's the second best quarterback of all time, because number one has been settled.
And Sarah Gideon, do you agree?
I do agree. We are big fans in our house.
Okay. And so I need to ask you, though, each of you, honestly, did you think that the Pats were going to pull it out?
So
at halftime,
I did make the mistake of saying to my son-in-law when the extra point was missed and they had scored the first touchdown and missed the extra point, it's just not going to be their night. But we were all pleasantly surprised. Should have known the whole way through that. Tommy Terrific was going to pull it off, but that's what happened, and boy, couldn't be happier.
Yeah, we were worried, honestly. My oldest son, I think, was near tears, and the Falcons looked really hungry, and, you know, we're playing better at that point. So, yeah, we were worried.
Okay, well, so is this affecting the mood of the State House today?
It's what everybody's talking about. It is the greatest 8 minutes of football I've ever seen in my entire life, to come from 19 points down with 8 minutes left and tie the score in the Super Bowl and then take the ball in overtime and go down and score the game-winning touchdown. Just amazing. Everybody's talking about it. Great day to be a New England Patriots fan.
I wish our listeners could see the enthusiasm on Senate President Mike Thibodeau's face that matches his words here.
Yeah. Well, I know that as far as the legislative session goes, we're really more in the first half than in the second half, but I'm sure you all are not hoping to have everything come together at the very end, as it has so many times in the past. Sarah Gideon, at this point in the session, what are the priorities of your caucus? What are Democrats in the legislature really hoping to accomplish this session?
Yeah, so I think two things. I think, number one, we are really focused on looking at a couple of what we would consider emergency issues. First of all, that is the number of kids who are in poverty in the state, which has increased at a rate that is far above the national average, in fact, and that I think everybody would agree is unconscionable and not something we want to happen. The other thing, as evidenced by some numbers that came out last week in terms of overdose deaths in this state, the highest ever. And I think that's another emergency issue that we're really focused on. But aside from those things and in a positive way, we really want to look at both short-term and long-term growth for the economy, how we invest in the short-term in things that we think about and talk about every day, like infrastructure and education, and how we really rethink the long-term future of Maine and Maine's economy and what that should look like.
All right, Mike Thibodeau, what are Republicans talking about? What are your legislative priorities right now?
Jennifer, I'll assure you that if you're not talking about how we grow Maine's economy and make Maine not only the best place in the world to live, but also to make a living, then you're missing, you know, you're missing what's important to the people that you represent. So that can mean all sorts of different things. A lot of the stuff that we'll talk about with regards to growing Maine's economy is investment. Some of it will be stuff that's in the budget. Some of it will be stuff that voters passed. And the referendum questions created a tremendous amount of work. My guess is you'll probably ask us about that at some point. A lot of the work that the 128th legislature is going to do revolves directly around what the voters passed on November 8th as far as petitions, citizens' initiatives.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Mike, you spearheaded the effort, and it was successful to have the Maine Senate voted to create a solemn occasion and ask the Maine Supreme Court whether ranked choice voting was constitutional, that in direct response to the initiative process and the election in November. Did you do that thinking that it perhaps was not constitutional?
Well, I think that it's, at least according to a lot of people with, you know, legal backgrounds, including Janet Mills, Maine's Attorney General, who issued her own opinion back on March 4th, 2016, she lays out a very clear case for this not fitting within the framework of Maine's Constitution. So we think and still believe that it's absolutely imperative that the court weigh in on this important question. The last thing in the world that we want to do is to have Secretary Dunlap go and run the next election cycle under a set of laws, which is what the voters passed with statute. If that statute doesn't fit within the confines of Maine's Constitution, there are a lot of legal opinions out there that say it doesn't. I believe that the responsible thing will be for the court to pick this up, give the legislature clear direction as to whether or not it's constitutional or not, because we wouldn't want to be in a situation where we have, and more than likely there'll be more than three candidates for governor. We'll have a Republican, a Democrat, and the Maine traditionally has somebody that's unenrolled that runs as a third-party candidate. If nobody, which has been a longstanding tradition, if nobody receives 50% of the vote, we could be months figuring out who the next governor of our state is. The last thing we want, the last thing in the world you want to do is cast doubt as to the fairness and accuracy of an election system. So I think it's the right thing to do. We don't want this to turn into Maine's version of the hanging chad.
All right. And Sarah, is this something that the Democrats have taken a position on? Because as Mike Thibodeau mentioned Janet Mills' name, she is a Democrat, former head of the Maine Democratic Party.
Yeah, so I think what you can see is that this is not really a partisan issue. It's a question, you know, I think whether you're talking about the original referendum question or the question of the solemn occasion, which the Senate passed last week, it's really at this point about finding what is, you know, is this constitutional? Is it in keeping with the law? Will it create problems for us, or will we have smooth sailing in the future? And the Senate has, you know, asked for that question to be answered by the court.
Do we know yet if the court will answer it?
So we expect the letter will go out from the secretary. I think it actually went out on Friday, sent over to the court. So they'll be getting that as early as today or tomorrow. And then they've got, you know, obviously the Chief Justice and the other justice will have to decide whether or not to take it up. Most everybody I talk to thinks without a doubt they will. But, you know, that process will take a few weeks, I would anticipate. And then, you know, it'd be another month or so before. And I don't want to put, you know, good
and
Lord, they set their
about
own schedule.
So 2 years from now, right? So there's not a really hard deadline.
Well,
yet.
You say that, but there's nothing that says that there couldn't be a vacancy in either one of the chambers at any point.
I see.
And so that's why it's incredibly important. Also, Jennifer, if this were constitutional, it means that the legislature has to appropriate a substantial amount of money for Secretary Dunlap in order for him to do his job. He's got a huge investment to make millions of dollars to buy software to make sure that we're in a position to count these votes in the manner that was called out by this statute.
So practically speaking, when do you need an answer by?
I would hope that they would take it up and that we would be getting an answer by sometime early spring.
All right. Let's talk about another ballot initiative, Sarah. The voters narrowly approved the initiative to fund Maine's schools with this surtax on income above $200,000. Will Maine schools next year see more money in their budgets?
Yeah, I believe that they will. First of all, the law has gone into effect. So, you know, as people are getting their tax forms, they are seeing this reflected, and the state will begin collecting revenue. We have every intention of making sure that revenue is going to the place that it's intended, which is schools. And I think that, you know, you have heard probably from multiple people, no matter which side of the aisle that they sit on, that education is really, really important to all of us. We know that it is the number one factor for success for our kids and for our future productivity. So
how do we know, though? I mean, it's also law that 55% of essential programs and services should be funded by the state, and that does not happen. So how can people who voted for that initiative be assured that their local school district will see the impact?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of ways. First of all, as the question was worded, and I paraphrase, it does specify that the money goes into K through 12 classrooms, that it's used in the classroom. So there is that. I think also that we are very committed. I can tell you that Democrats are very committed to making sure this funding is going into schools, but also looking a little bit further and saying, hey, if we have this extra funding going into schools, what are the districts and who are the students and teachers who need it most?
Yeah, and Jennifer, you said something really interesting. How do we know that the local schools are going to see the impact? The reality is we've got a serious problem with the funding formula. We've got to figure out how to make that more equitable, because not every local school will see the impact. This all funnels back through the school funding formula that most people would that have some background recognize has got some substantial flaws in it. So we want to make sure that we get a look at that before we, you know, before too long and address that situation.
Right. And you're nodding, Sarah. You both believe school funding formula probably needs to continually be evaluated, correct?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I think so. And especially I think this question really brings that to light. You know, as I look at even my own community, does my community need another $3 million in funding? Or, you know, are there communities in Piscataquis County, Washington County that really need a boost in funding instead?
All right. The governor this morning briefed the Appropriations Committee on his budget, but he released the budget a month ago. And we know some of the governor's priorities. Mike Thibodeau, he wants to lower the state's income tax. He talks about a flat tax. Do members of your caucus agree with that?
I think that you'll find widespread agreement that a 10.15% income tax rate is unacceptable. We're going to have to figure out a way to make sure that this additional funding goes to our schools. But the idea that we're going to have our small businesses paying at that kind of rate, which is double a state like Massachusetts. You have to go to California and make more than $1 million to find anybody even close to that kind of rate. That's going to be devastating to our economy. It's going to discourage investment. We've got to grow our economy. We've got to encourage investment in our state. So I think that 3% is going to be key to a lot of the discussions. What it doesn't mean is that we are not going to put additional resources to our school. We absolutely are committed to finding resources, finding a way to fund them schools. But I think it was pretty clear to me, the voters clearly want property tax relief. They clearly want additional resources going towards public education. I think all of us understand that message and got, you know, received that loud and clear. But we want to honor the spirit of what the voters passed, which is that additional funding for public education, without doing the harm to our economy. That 10.15 is so far at a step that we're going to have a lot of conversation about how we're going to find this funding.
Sarah, do you agree?
So I think when I look at what's proposed in the governor's budget and the tax structures, the one thing that feels unacceptable to me is the idea that low or middle income Mainers would actually see an increase in their taxes when you look at an entire tax burden, income tax and sales tax and property tax. We are absolutely committed to making sure that doesn't happen. And open to conversations that involve looking at taxes in their entirety. So I think that's where we are right now.
The governor has said I believe the number is 500, that he wants to reduce the number of people who work for the state by about 500 people. Do you think that that's possible and reasonable?
Listen, I think that, first of all, what we've seen over the past couple of years, past 4 to 6 years, in fact, are that we have many, many vacancies in state government. And we also see departments who are not able to function as well as they can and to do their jobs for the people in the state of Maine. In terms of cutting jobs, when I look at a budget, when I look at putting together something that works for Maine people, it's not about choosing a number and deciding how we actually cut by that number. It's about looking at the work that we have to do and making sure we can complete it.
Do you believe, Mike, that the state workforce could be or should be smaller?
So I think that's a little bit too broad of a question, Jen. First of all, of them 500 positions, how many of them are actually filled or how many of them are vacant? Are they simply positions that we're budgeting for, or are they positions that are filled and have an actual person doing the work? If some of them are actually filled and doing the work, then let's have a public process. Let's figure out the value of the work that they're doing. Can it be picked up in other fashions and other ways? And so, obviously, a long process trying to understand what them positions are. And my understanding is not all of them, are actually filled positions, but they're just positions that are budgeted for.
Okay. State of the State address tomorrow night, weather permitting. What do you expect, Sarah? And I'm going to ask you guys a little bit of a bigger question. How much does it matter?
Well, listen, here's what I would expect from the person that's leading our state. I would expect a positive and collaborative vision that really focuses on where we are right now and where we want to be in the future. That would include lifting Mainers out of poverty. That would include creating new jobs in this state. That would include, really thinking about the crises we face in terms of the opioid epidemic.
So, Jennifer, the really great news is we're going to have a snowstorm, and this is a great opportunity to go out and buy one of them, the only shovel made in Maine, a Mount Waldo Snowfighter. And if you pick up a pink one, you'll be contributing to an important cause, which is helping to fund the defeat of cancer. To this point, we've raised almost $40,000 doing exactly that. So there's my short commercial. Now back to the
And I would encourage you to go to the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page and post information about that.
Nice, 40 grand. Very proud of that. Look, tomorrow, the governor's going to have an opportunity to address the people of the state of Maine, to tell us about his vision for the future of our state. Feel good that he's taking that opportunity, sharing his vision. It ought to be a lot of folks will tune in to hear that. And so whether it snows or not, unless we have Snowmageddon coming, I think we'll probably push forward and give the governor the opportunity to do that.
Good. And my plug is that we will be airing that live on Maine Public Television and Maine Public Radio at 7 o'clock. We do have to go to a break when we come back. More of our conversation with the legislative leadership.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Struggling rural counties and key states helped put Donald Trump in the White House, but some experts are skeptical that his policies will help. Instead, they say rural America needs to invest in healthcare, education, and immigrants.
The rural regions that will thrive in the future are the ones where that diversity is strongly expressed.
I'm Audie Cornish. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Scott Horsley. For a lot of people, supporting Maine Public Radio is a badge of the broad-minded. They support this station not only because it's good for them, but because it's good for the whole community. They support this station to make sure that Maine Public Radio stays strong and doesn't go away. They want to help create and maintain the great programs they love. And they support this station because every time they listen, there's no doubt Maine Public Radio is worthy of their financial contributions. If that sounds like you, how about making your contribution right now and have it count towards the Super Thursday one-day membership drive? Thanks.
Super Thursday is coming up this Thursday, February 9th, but you can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475. And thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the latest news from the legislature. We're in the Augusta studio. With me, House Speaker Sarah Gideon. She is from Freeport and is a Democrat. And Senate President Michael Thibodeau is also with us. He is a Republican from Waldo County. We invite you to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, brief please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to start with Esther, who is calling from Portland. Hi, Esther. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I live in Portland. I work as a restaurant server, and I've been hearing a lot about the governor wanting to take away the increase for workers like me. I voted for the minimum wage increase because I don't want to rely only on tips for my customers as my paycheck, and I don't think people will tip less with the increase. I haven't seen this happen at all. So my question is, will the legislature stand up to Governor LePage and keep the minimum wage increase intact for workers like me?
So, Esther, I appreciate your perspective on the tip credit. I assume that's what you're referring to when it comes to wait staff in restaurants. I can assure you that the young lady that waited on me on Saturday morning at the local restaurant in Winterport had the exact opposite opinion. She desperately wanted the legislature to reinstate the tip credit. So I don't think that the servers are speaking necessarily with one voice, but I will assure you that I have had many servers and restaurant owners come to me and say, look, this is part of our culture. This is the expectation that the individual that's waiting my table is working for a sub-minimum wage. Therefore, it's up to me to make sure that I leave a good tip so that that person is able to make a decent wage is part of our culture. And I think that that's important for people to understand. Many people that do the exact same job as you are very concerned that the message will be, well, this person makes a minimum wage, therefore they'll get less of a tip. So there's just no...
Mike, are you still in sort of the trying to figure out your stand on this issue?
No, not
or do
at all.
I actually
think that there's very little question that the legislature should deal with the tip credit aspect of this. I don't think that it's good for our restaurant industry. I don't think it's good for the servers. I think it's a mistake, and we ought to take and repeal that portion of the law.
Sarah, what is your what do you and what does your caucus believe?
Yeah, so in terms of the minimum wage question, the referendum question, first of all, we were excited to see minimum wage on the ballot because we had worked so hard to pass an increase in minimum wage in this legislature and had been unable to do it time and time again. So when Mainers voted to give other Mainers a raise, we cheered. I do understand that there are people who feel in the restaurant industry very strongly on both sides of this issue in terms of the tipped credit. I know for a fact that there are bills that look at changing the law that was implemented just this January on this. I know that those conversations will, take place around these bills. And I think we're going to see people on different sides of the issue on this, quite honestly.
So what happens in the end? Is this something where the Democratic-led House and the Republican-led Senate are going to disagree? And if there's not a bill that passes an agreement, is the default what was on the initiative?
That's right. If a bill doesn't pass to change this, then the law, current law, which is what the referendum was, would remain in effect.
Yeah, and Jennifer, I would suggest that that's probably not the likely outcome. This isn't a purely partisan issue. There are Democrats and Republicans alike that recognize that this tip credit was an issue before it went out to the voters, had multiple folks from both sides of the aisle pointing this out as one of the potential things that the legislature would have to come back and fix should it pass. And I anticipate that the legislature is going to take some action.
All right. Thanks, Esther, for your call. And let's see. We are going to go to Tom, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hello. Good morning. Afternoon at this point. Sorry. Ms. President and Ms. Speaker, thank you for participating in this forum. I am calling to express my support and encourage you folks to give due consideration to an upcoming bill which promotes the transition of the entire state of Maine to the Atlantic time zone, dispensing along the way with daylight savings time. I have, for a great number of years, thought that this would be a splendid idea, in that geographically Maine is more longitudinally associated with the Atlantic time zone than the Eastern time zone.
Tom, thanks for your call. I have a good friend who sounds just like you. He's really excited about this idea. It is a perennial issue, isn't it? Sarah, do you believe this is going to be an issue before this legislature? And how do you feel about the idea of changing our time zone?
So, in fact, I believe that there are two bills dealing with this, both from House members, from a Republican House member and a Democratic House member, at least. So the conversation will certainly take place. I think there was even an article about it in today's Portland Press Herald. I really have not investigated enough to have a firm position on it, to be honest. I find the idea somewhat appealing, but I also have questions about how it affects us in terms of other New England states and work and travel and other issues like that.
So, Tom, if you hurry to the State House, my belief is that they're having a public hearing on that bill this afternoon in state and local government. So it's a great opportunity to get up here, make sure that that committee clearly understands your thoughts on it. Look, Tom Brady has been operating in another time zone for a very long time. It served him well. So we'll see how they make out this afternoon.
Tom, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from Lewis. Does the governor's lack of respect for the Patriot Organization of Bob Craft impact the tourist trade from Massachusetts and the rest of New England who follow the Pats? This is not something you're going to pass a bill on, but if you want to answer Lewis, tell me what you think.
I think that's a hard question to answer. You know, I think in general, whether we're talking about the Patriots or anything else, we want to have a very welcoming environment in Maine. But everyone does have opinions, especially about sports teams.
Yeah, and I think that the governor's welcome to his opinion. You know, I like to back winners. The New England Patriots are clearly the class of the NFL. Pretty excited about that. And, you know, I think if Bob Kraft's interested in investing in our state, I hope he comes to the State House, because we're very interested in seeing him invest in our state. And, you know, matter of fact, maybe we can even talk about moving them to Portland or Bangor instead of, Foxborough.
Okay, so here's an email back to the initiative question. This is from Victoria. I'm a resident of Kennebunk and worked on the ranked choice voting initiative collecting signatures. The people I talked with at the polls were overwhelmingly in favor of requiring a majority to elect the governor, U.S. senators, and representatives. If RCV is found unconstitutional, I have a solution. The legislature should begin the process of changing the Constitution to read majority rather than plurality. That would respect the expressed will of the people. The concept of majority was more important than the method in which it is reached. Is that a possibility?
So, Victoria, thank you for your question. So I think we're looking at crossing one bridge at a time. And the first question is, does the court take this up? We think they will. Their decision will then put us in a place where we need to decide what is our next course of action. I do think that it is very likely that we would look at, is there a way to either look at the Constitution, or would it be an easier fix to just look at how to change ranked choice voting in a way that this, if this were a problem, that we alleviate that issue. Changing the Constitution is a very big undertaking.
Yeah, and again, the threshold to change Maine's Constitution would be that the legislature would have to initiate it with a two-thirds majority vote. The idea of finding two-thirds of the legislature that agrees to change the Constitution may be a high threshold for us to accomplish that. But the last thing, and I think to a person, if you take your oath of office serious, the last thing you want to do as a member of the legislature is to have an election in a way that violates Maine's Constitution. We take an oath of office to uphold that Constitution. That's why it was so important to the Senate to move forward and ask the court for clarity on this, because that's part of our oath.
Thank you, Victoria, for your email. We're going to move up to Orono and Steve. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, I thought there was some talk about tweaking the referendum process. I certainly think that government by referendum is turning into a real, muddy and chaotic and, their legal stuff. I don't know if there's any way to do it. I'm sure that everybody has great intentions when they put these together, and I think the legislature and the governor has to deal with the unintended consequences, and one being right up here in Bangor, two folks that I grew up with that have had businesses for over 50 years, and one of them, he's never been political, and he just said that he doesn't know if his business in the restaurant business will be able to survive for 2 years if the tip credit. And then we have other folks who are working in the school department that certainly believe that the marijuana issue is so un...
Steve, let me ask you this. How would you like to see the referendum process changed?
What I'd like to do is see it go to some type of council within state government or something, so that you bring your concept and then either have the judiciary or the legislature or somebody saying, here's the concerns we have as you're writing this referendum, and before they send these out, because at the end of the day, we're talking about going back and redoing this that never got done.
I'm going to let our guests respond.
So, Steve, thanks for your question, and thanks also for your creative ideas about how to deal with it. It's certainly been the subject of multiple interviews that I think the Senate President and I have had, and conversations that are happening in the State House right now. Again, I know there are a number of bills that look at the way to change the referendum process. I think that most of all, most importantly, we really want government that works for people. We come here to represent the people of Maine and work very hard to think through all of those unanticipated or unintended consequences as we create laws. And sometimes that can be left out of the referendum process. I personally am open to looking at how we might change it to make it better. And I don't know exactly what that answer is right now, but I do think that we are probably headed in that direction on some level.
Yeah, and I think there's a growing understanding that referendum process has got some flaws in it. I've spoken to many groups about the referendums that recently passed, and I always ask for a show of hands. How many folks in this room actually sat down and took time to read the 30 pages that were attached to this referendum or that, and you never get any hands. The reality is, we had hundreds of thousands of people that went to the polls, and they did the best they can to figure out, what direction they thought the state ought to go based on them referendum questions. But nobody that went to the polls really wanted minors to use marijuana. I don't believe that. Nobody went to the polls with the idea of, making it so that that Maine small businesses would struggle to attract investment, to create jobs. These questions have been vetted in the public arena here at the State House. The problem was they just didn't find the representatives, because we live in a representative democracy, not a direct democracy. The folks didn't see the merit in the arguments and couldn't find the votes. My guess is that we're going to come up with something that, the folks in Piscataquis County, the folks in Aroostook County, Washington County, Waldo County, Somerset County, they all want their voices heard too. And right now we're in a situation where folks in York and Cumberland County can't go to the Walmart without being accosted by somebody with a clipboard trying to get them to sign another petition. And that's where they hire people to go out and get these.
Though wouldn't have, by the measures you're talking about, wouldn't have all of the initiatives in this last ballot made it? I mean, many of the signatures were collected from both districts.
Many of the signatures were collected in York and Cumberland County. It's not very often that you see folks in Dover, Foxcroft, Maine collecting signatures. Most of the time, it's in our urban areas. And many of these ballot initiatives pass by the narrowest of margins. I think that the voters fully expect that the legislature is going to take a hard look at that and try to make improvements on some of the faults or flaws in what was passed. The other thing that you don't want to forget, through a citizen's initiative, for instance, the marijuana issue, who wrote that law? It's the advocates for legalization. The idea that that was written in a fair and even-handed, measured way is probably not a fair assessment. Maine is going to have be the only state in the nation that has smoking clubs where people can go and use marijuana in a club atmosphere. I don't know that everybody back home in Waldo County knew that that was on the ballot when they answered that question.
We do have to go to another break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the law firm of Eaton Peabody's Real Estate Litigation Group, working to protect real estate interests throughout Maine. And Goodwill of Northern New England, with a 10-year goal of helping 10,000 households build stable lives through work. GoodwillNNE.org.
Maine Governor Paul LePage gives his State of the State address Tuesday evening, and Maine Public will be there. Tune into Maine Public Television or Maine Public Radio Tuesday evening at 7 for live coverage of the governor's speech and the Democratic response. The State of the State, Tuesday evening at 7 on Maine Public Radio and Television, with a rebroadcast Wednesday afternoon on Maine Public Radio.
Hi, it's Mark Vogelsang, CEO of Maine Public. We're doing all we can to ensure that Maine Public Radio provides you with the best service we possibly can offer, a service that features our new lineup of NPR news shows and critical information. Today, there are more reasons than ever before to lend your support. More choice, more essential NPR journalism, more news programs. We're doing what we can to make Maine Public Radio live up to all that you want us to be. Listeners like you play a crucial role to keep this independent news service strong. So please stand up and be counted. You can do that on Super Thursday, our one-day membership campaign on February 9th. Whether it's joining me in becoming a sustaining monthly Evergreen supporter or becoming a new contributor, together we can do this and help pay for the news that we all care about. Of course, you can also pledge online right now, this second, and have it count toward our Super Thursday goals at mainpublic.org. Thanks.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the latest news from Augusta. In our Augusta studio with me, Maine Senate President Michael Thibodeau and House Speaker Sarah Gideon. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Going to go to Scarborough and Tom. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I have two different things. The first one, they both relate to the budget. The first one is, if you're going to deal with the opiate crisis, you've got to expand Maine care. There's no immediate fix to the opiate crisis except by providing services. And not having access to finances for those services prevents people from having them. It has to be done. The second thing is in relation to prevention. The opiate crisis has to be dealt with on a prevention level similar to that which was effective in Maine for the tobacco with children. The treatment programs are not terribly efficacious, and they're very expensive. Prevention is 100%. The second thing I want to comment on is that in Governor King, in Governor LePage's budget, he proposes to eliminate the Maine public defender system by corporatizing it and privatizing it, and that is an affront to justice because the only thing that government has to do is provide justice. And I'd like a comment from both the president and the speaker on that. Thank you.
All right. Sarah, you want to start with Maine care and the opioid crisis?
Sure. I'm happy to start with that. Thank you very much, Tom, for your comments. And yes and yes regarding opiates. I do agree, and you know, have voted for and would love to see Medicaid expansion. We've looked at it comprehensively in the legislature. We've also looked at it just specifically dealing with addiction issues. Have not been able to pass that here. There was an announcement last week, I don't know if you saw, for a ballot initiative for Medicaid expansion coming up. And in terms of prevention and treatment, I really agree with that. I think, you know, we probably universally agree that there is a three-tiered approach or a three-legged approach to dealing with addiction and this crisis situation we're in: prevention, treatment, prevention, and then treatment and law enforcement. But without a doubt, if we could actually really beef up the education and prevention in the first place before it's too late, that is the best thing we can do. In terms of indigent legal services and the governor's proposal for a public defender system, I think that we're going to be having conversations about that in the legislature. My first take on it is I'm not crazy about the idea. I think that indigent legal services provides the services that are needed. I think it's a question of us making sure that we are actually compensating these attorneys, you know, in a way that allows them to do this work, take their time away from the rest of their practice to do this work and defend people. And I really have some big question marks about what a public defender system would look like.
Sure. And Tom, I appreciate your you know, talking about these two issues. The first thing I'd say surrounding the public defender system is that I think maybe Tom has it a little backwards. Currently, it is a privatized system. In other words, it's your local attorneys that have private practices that are part of a public defender system. And I think what the governor is actually proposing is making them state employees and having a, you know, the state actually have a public defender's commissioner, wrong word.
But an office staffed by public defenders.
Staffed by public defenders rather than doing it like it currently is through the private sector. So we're going to have a long discussion about that, try to figure out if that's the way to deliver these services so that in the most cost-effective way or whether we're already in that model. So that, you know, I think maybe Tom might have been have that a little bit backwards. The other thing that I want to talk about is the whole opioid crisis. You know, it was just a year ago. We were all here and, you know, we needed 10 more DEA agents. And we were able to find the resources and get a bill passed that did exactly that. And as part of that, there was going to be also some additional beds for detox beds. The reality is we're still in a crisis. Until people come to the realization that this is absolutely going to be devastating to their lives, look around you. Understand that this is not the answer. You are not going to beat the odds. People need to recognize that this will have a devastating and destructive impact on your life. Reject that temptation to get involved in this. These are personal decisions that people are making, and by gracious, I just hope and pray that you know, folks will make the right decision, because we do have a crisis on our hands. We're doing the best we can to grapple with it, but no amount of money, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, $10 million, $50 million, or $500 million, this is going on all across our nation and in some cases throughout the world. And it is a huge problem. I hope people, you know, think about that before they make that conscious decision to try this stuff.
We're going to go to Jocko, who's calling from Abbott. Hi, Jocko. Go ahead. Jocko, go ahead. Okay, I guess we're going to move on to Michelle from Kennebunkport. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Hi there. This is going back to the tax revenue. I own a small business in Kennebunkport, and it's so seasonal in Maine. And the state of Maine just overtaxes all of its employees, all the business owners. And one of my good clients, she produces movies, and she's based out of Georgia. And Georgia gives a 20% tax incentive to the movie industry. So say they have a $5 million movie, they get $2 million back, excuse me. So, and there's an additional tax if they do, like, spend more money. So the state of Georgia, they had an increase of $1 billion in tax revenue last year. And my question is, why doesn't Maine do anything to bring additional, like, tax revenue in? When I talked to her about Maine, she said Maine's one of the only states in the United States that does not give any tax incentives and actually taxes on top of it. So can you tell
me? Sure, and we've heard this for years from people producing films in Maine, that they would like to have more of a tax credit for production, film and television production in Maine, and other states do offer incentives like you talked about in Georgia. Is there any talk about discussing this in the legislature this session?
So there is. This, as Jennifer mentioned, is an issue that we've talked about before. And I think we recognize that there's a real problem here. We see films, we see TV shows that are supposedly based in Maine and filmed everywhere but Maine.
Vancouver.
Yeah, absolutely. Vancouver, Massachusetts, even California. So we would love to change that and figure out how we incentivize these industries to be here and what that correct formula is for doing that. I think I know we're having the conversation. I'm very open to that conversation.
Sure. And Jennifer, if I could just broaden that out and not focus purely on the movie industry, but it's any business. You offer incentives to encourage things to happen in your state that you want to see happen. When you want to create jobs or encourage investment, you give tax incentives because you're competing with other states in the nation for these jobs and these investments. When you want to discourage a certain type of activity, then you tax it more, much like cigarettes. I mean, we have increased the tax on cigarettes over the past decade or two, because we want to discourage people from smoking. We're in a situation right now where I think with a 10.15% income tax rate that we're starting to discourage investment and Maine small businesses from growing. And we want to be ready to address that.
Michelle, thank you so much for calling into Maine Calling today. Let's see. We'll move on to David, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. I'm a retired school teacher and here in Belfast, worked for SAD 34, which no longer exists, for many years, 30 years. And I just wanted to quickly tell a story of a budget hearing approximately 5-6 years ago in Belfast, where the superintendent stood up in front of everyone and said, the state is cutting back our budget, $700,000 approximately. At that same meeting, a citizen stood up and said, I'm going to lose my home. I can't afford to pay the tax burden that's coming onto me. Whether the connection was made, I made the connection. The state, and this is a long-term issue with the state not getting the money to the towns that they need to support their schools. And as a result, property taxes going up. So I would just like to hear a comment on that. Thanks very much.
And David, related to your call is an email. I'm trying to find it here in the stack of emails, but also saying, bringing us back to the 55% funding. Clearly, both of you are hearing the message that voters want education funded and they don't want to have their property taxes go up. Mike, you've already said it almost word for word what I just said. At the end of this session, are the voters of Maine going to be happy on that topic?
Yeah. So listen, it's a long process and a lot of work we have ahead of us. But I do believe that we will come together to make sure that happens. I think we, as both Senate President and I have said it in different ways here, are very committed to our communities, very committed to education, and understand full well what the voters have asked for in terms of education funding. But additionally, David, you hit the nail right on the head. The tie between funding education or funding revenue sharing, you know, what the state is giving back to municipalities that they've sent to Augusta, is absolutely a direct correlation to property taxes. And if we are holding back up here in Augusta from sending that money to communities and investing in communities so that you can invest in your young people, then we're doing something really wrong. And Maine property owners and Maine taxpayers at the end of the day are the ones who pay the price.
Yeah, and this is something that's gone on for far too long. I was a member of the House when Governor Baldacci was in office. And, you know, we went through a pretty tough recession. And, you know, the state was able to balance its budget, but it balanced it at the expense of revenue sharing and general purpose aid to our schools. And, you know, for far too long, we've struggled to ramp that back up. During the last budget, we were able to put an additional $50 million towards education. I anticipate that trend's going to continue. I think that we're going to, you know, that folks will be very happy with the commitment that this legislature has towards public education. I think they sent a very clear message to all of us elected officials that they want more resources going to public education.
Mike, thanks so much. Or excuse me, David, thank you for your call. We're almost out of time, and I want to ask you all, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is as the governor briefed the Appropriations Committee this morning, that's the beginning of a 6 to 8 week process in which public input is not only welcome but needed. If someone is listening to this program today and feels strongly about something that will be considered in the budget, and everything is considered in the budget, what does one do?
Well, there's a couple of opportunities for them to weigh in. First, you know, each and every committee of jurisdiction, whether it's Health and Human Services, state and local government, you know, all these different policy committees will hear portions of their budget in their committee. And so there's a great opportunity to go and appear in them committees' hearings and share with the committee of jurisdiction the impact of you know, proposed budget, you know, the budget's proposal, if whether it's increasing or decreasing funding, how that will impact their lives. So there's a great opportunity there. And then, again, all of them committees will report back to the Appropriations Committee as to what they heard and how they feel about the specific lines that are, you know, that they deal with. And it's a very public process. Hopefully folks will get engaged and, you know, make sure that their voices are heard.
And we'll post a link to the legislative calendar on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. Sarah, letters and phone calls work?
Letters and phone calls absolutely work. And I think I might have even said this to you before, Jennifer, that, you know, if a legislator receives 10 phone calls, that feels like a lot of voices to them, and they're listening and they want to hear from you. And that is really the only way that all of us can do our work in a way that represents your needs.
Thank you both for being here. Sarah Gideon, Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives, a Democrat from Freeport. Michael Thibodeau, Maine Senate President and a Republican from Waldo County. Nikki Shields ran the board today. And special thank you to Mal Leary, who always helps us when we're here in the Augusta studio. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to discuss the latest research on the health effects of marijuana. Learn what we know about cannabinoids and how they impact your body. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.